Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska!
We could not talk or talk forever. And still find things to not talk about.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, April 20, 2022, and this is the interview edition of the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 457 of the Biden-Harris administration, 199 days until the 22 midterms. Find me on Instagram at TheBobSeska, Twitter, BobSeska_go. Rachel Bitticoffer returns to the show today. I'm not breaking any news when I say that after two successful national elections, one in 2018, another in 2020, the Democrats are in serious jeopardy of losing everything, everything that we worked for in those elections. The big question is this: what do we have to do in order to reverse the historic trend and actually expand majorities rather than gifting the unpatriotic weirdos and grifters on the Republican side with majorities across the board? So I decided to bring in political strategist Rachel Bitticoffer to talk about where the Democrats are lacking and especially how to fix it so we can actually clobber the Republicans this year. There's some harsh reality in today's show, but there's also quite a bit of hope. But the time for action is right damn now. So let's dig in, put on our war faces. Meantime, think about supporting this show by signing up for our bonus content at BobSeskaShow.com. All right, here's me talking with Rachel Bitticoffer.
More fun, more music, the Bob Seska Show.
Tell him he's going to get me in trouble barking at that garbage truck.
That was like a jump scare. That was the first thing I heard was your dog. What's your dog's name?
Well, this one's Hamilton. I have two, remember? Ginsburg and Hamilton.
Oh,
Hamilton,
that's right.
The one I picture more on Twitter because he's always snuggling with me.
Well, it's great to talk to you again, Rachel. Welcome back to the show.
How the hell are you doing, Bob?
I'm doing just as well as everyone else, staring into the burning the burning Chernobyl reactor on a day-to-day basis.
Yes.
Oh, my God. You know, we never do, Rachel. We never talk about non-politics Rachel Bitticoffer. What kind of movies and TV are you watching these days? What's occupying your non-politics time?
Oh, dude, Bob. Listen, man. Okay, I don't know. If I had a lot of fun when I was young, okay, let me be clear. I had a rip roaring good time.
I imagine.
Until my mid 20s when I settled down. Mm-hmm. So it's not that I haven't lived, okay?
Yeah.
So I don't want you guys to cry me a river here. When I tell you I don't spend a lot of time right now not on the focused on Democratic collapse, right?
Wow.
So like what I've been doing in my free time for fun is intensively studying the rise of fascist movements in other countries.
Yeah, sounds fun. Yeah.
Yep. How they consolidate power, right? Mm. You know, what in order to disrupt it, because if you can't, you have to understand how something occurs to disrupt it, you know?
Sure.
And then in addition to that, you know, a little bit of military strategy because, well, you know, if shit hits the fan, I want to be useful.
Yeah, you do need a break once in a while, right? It's like fascism's too much. Then, well, you know, it's on the lighter side, military strategy.
There you go. When I want to take something like now, occasionally I'll squeeze in an episode of Bridgerton, which is a season two of a season one show that premiered during the pandemic, and it's kind of like a little bit more salty version of Downton Abbey, a little less, you know, distinguished. Mm-hmm. That's my guilty pleasure. I read a lot. I read for pleasure. I'm always reading a couple at a time recreational books.
Great.
But, you know, I've also got a special needs son, and I have to be hands-on with my son a lot more than you would a regular eight-year-old. So it's, I just don't get a lot of free time. And I feel compelled right now to spend the time I do have trying to avoid this hot mess.
Are you guys still, are you settled in on the West Coast now?
You know what? It's funny because until yesterday, I'd have to say no, because I've been waiting for my Oregon license plates, which is a very important moment to me. Let me tell you, when I left to go to graduate school in 2009 in Georgia, the very last thing I was able to hold on to from Oregon was my plates. And I didn't replace them until I was legally required to. And when I took them off of my station wagon back then, it was with a real trepidation that I'd never make it home. And so when I got home a couple months ago, I was, you know, I'm going to get my plates and it's going to be a big moment when I put my Pacific Wonderland Oregon tags back on. And, you know, damn if they just never showed up until yesterday.
Oh, my God.
So to answer your question, now I feel complete.
You know what I always do, Rachel? Whenever I hear someone has moved to Oregon, I go right to a TV series on TLC called Little People, Big World. And it's, oh my God, if you've just recently moved to Oregon, it should be an orientation video for anyone who's just moved there. Because it's like, it's this farm in rural Portland in that area that is run by little people. And they sell pumpkins at Halloween time. And plus, they've had a reality show on TLC for like the last 25 years. Oh my God, this show is so incredibly addictive. But it's basically all I know about what happens in Oregon. That's my full impression of Oregon is Little People, Big World.
And you know, I'm incapable of telling you whether it's reflective or not, because I've never seen that show.
I'm above
TLC fare occasionally. I'm a very cultured individual, Bob. You should understand. I'm so cultured. I can go from Deadliest Catch all the way to So You Think You Can Dance. And I might even throw in. So, you know, I'm definitely a huge football fan. So, of course, there's that. You know, and I've even been known to watch that Say Yes to the Dress show a few times and be hypercritical about women that want to wear mermaids that don't have flattering mermaid forms. Get myself in a little Twitter trouble there, buddy.
I'm going to have to fly out there and we'll just have to watch TV together for a while. I think that would be a blast to just sit and
wait till you see Oregon. You ever want to come out here, buddy? I'll take you on a tour of wine country. You'll lick Pinot Noir right out of casks. Okay.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
You'll taste the best cheese that you've ever eaten in your life.
Yeah.
And you'll get to see the Emerald Valley in all of its shiny glory. Wow. But I definitely recommend you do that over the summertime when Oregon is at peak beauty.
So are you still working on Strike Pack? Is that still a thing?
No, I left Strike Pack on the 1st of April, so the 1st of this month, so that I would be non-affiliated with a super PAC, so that I could work directly with federal candidates and any pertinent clients that I wanted to for the fall. After I realized, so with Strike Pack, you know, my ultimate mission is a 51-seat, 218 majority plan, okay?
Nice.
And in order to compete with that, we are going to have to deploy a centralized, aggressive, referendum style brand offensive against Republicans in as many swing locations as possible to have any chance of holding back this midterm effect. And I realized quickly that the Strike Pack was not going to have that kind of budget and that I could be more effective on affecting more strategy in more places if I was to outsource my brain. So that's what I'm doing right now.
So what are the odds? Let's say 10 being most likely the Democrats could defy history this year and one being the least likely. Where are you right now in terms of your general forecast on what's going to happen in November?
So I know two things as of today. I can track the two main polling indicators, and frankly, the only two that matter. You don't even need localized polling. All you need is these two indicators from national polls. And what that is the generic ballot, which asks people, do you want to vote for Republicans or Democrats in the fall? Mm-hmm. And then the enthusiasm gap, which asks, you know, voters generally, how enthusiastic are you to vote, or will you definitely vote? And then it crunches that data by party to see if there's a differential. Right.
Yeah.
And when Trump was in office, that differential heavily favored Democrats. Mm-hmm. Same with the generic ballot, 7-8 points all year. Now it's inverse. Number one, the generic ballot favors Republicans. It's a modest favorability because keep in mind, we have that national population advantage.
Yeah.
But it Democrats cannot even be tied on the generic ballot and be prepared to have a good cycle. OK, so right now, Republicans have 2-3 point advantage on that. Has not changed as the news cycle moved away from the internal divisions of the Democratic Party and its struggles with Manchin and Sinema to Ukraine and other headlines for over a month now. We've still seen no effect. And by the way, that's after Joe Biden has handled this NATO situation, the Ukrainian situation, given the constraint of nuclear destruction expertly, right? And there's been absolutely no rally around the flag effect. First time in American politics we've ever seen a national security crisis of this caliber, and we've seen no rally around the flag effect. And that's because mm-hmm. Republicans and right-leaning independents will not, unless the GOP gives them permission structure to do that via their media ecosystem, mm-hmm. will not ever give Joe Biden credit. He could save 10,000 children from a burning building on his back, and it wouldn't do it, right? So there's those two things. The enthusiasm differential is about 10 points. It was about 10 points in Virginia all year. I kept saying you have a massive coalitional enthusiasm problem. You should take a page out of the GOP's playbook and run a strategy that is directly dealing with that and simultaneously disqualifies the Republican Party. They, when they run it, they're disqualifying us from conversion voters or swing voters pools. And that's what the GOP does. They don't have a distinct message, one for the base, one for the middle of the electorate, right? Because they understand the middle of the electorate can be pushed emotionally, but they can't be they aren't policy wonks. They aren't going to be responsive to, hey, we have a better policy.
especially,
they would be if that was what they were getting hit with on both sides, but it's an asymmetrical approach. So when we look at those two things, Bob, that's a long wound up, but I want you guys to understand the data component of it.
Sure.
I will tell you that we have 0% chance of holding the House or the Senate today. Okay. And further, if we fail to do that, and we're talking about 20 seats down in the House, maybe 30 based on these two indicators right now, at least 3 Senate seats. If that is to occur, with it will almost certainly go the Michigan and the Pennsylvania governor races. Even if the polling shows it's competitive all the way through, those you cannot perform that poorly down ballot in these midterms or in the congressional ballots and still get the turnout and the conversion percentage you need to hold on to these very competitive states. Virginia just flipped. It's a far better electorate down in Virginia than there is up in the upper Midwest. Mm-hmm. And if you lose Virginia, almost lose New Jersey, not only does that mean the Midwest is in danger, but it expands the GOP's map all the way down to Colorado, right? So the Democrats have real issues here. It's not something that can be reasoned with, wished away. It's not obviously something that will improve itself with better news headlines, because Biden's had a relatively gentle cycle for at least a month now. We've seen no response. Mm-hmm. If you want to disrupt a midterm effect, you have to go right at it and force the conversation to become a referendum on the Republican Party instead.
Yeah, I checked 270 to win today, and it just based on their numbers and their consensus numbers specifically, it doesn't look like that much of a bloodbath. I mean, I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you. I think, you know, your 0% forecast is probably pretty accurate right now today. But as of also today, according to 270 to win, it's 47 on the Senate side. It's 47 Dem, 48 GOP with 5 toss-ups. And the toss-ups, Kelly in Arizona, Warnock in Georgia, Mosto in Nevada, and then Toomey's seat in Pennsylvania, plus Ron Johnson. And I think you can also see the disaster just in the toss-ups, because we've got basically four Democratic toss-ups, but only one Republican toss-up, and that's Ron Johnson. I'd like to see way more Republicans on that toss-up list. And then on the House side, it's 188 Dem, 184 GOP with 25 toss-ups. Now, only eight of the toss-ups are Republican seats. Once again, the same story as we saw in the Senate, where the toss-ups lean heavily in favor of the Republicans. So that means the Democrats have to sweep nearly all of the toss-up races. And from where we're looking right now, it doesn't look likely, does it?
Doesn't look like they'd win half of the toss-up races, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the thing with 270 crystal ball, silver stuff, that stuff will reflect what I'm telling you unless we disrupt the strategy, right?
Okay.
I mean, if we turn the Titanic, and we have time to do that right now, right, in terms of this messaging apparatus and the strategic effort that we put forward, we can change this. But let's say that I fail in that, and I would assume that I would fail in that, then as of today, those forecasts will look like what I'm telling you, but it will not be until September.
So what's driving this right now, Rachel? I mean, let's say, for example, if gas prices and inflation drop by, say, July, they're back down to somewhere, you know, what we would consider to be normal levels again. Will that be enough time for voters to calm the F down and look at Democrats again? Or have these issues already metastasized in voters' minds? Like, this is already...
No, it's absolutely impossible for that a small decrease in gas, or even large, or a decrease in inflation on its own is going to change the fundamentals. The fundamentals are set in stone. And I'm not talking about economic fundamentals. I'm talking about structural fundamentals.
Ugh.
This is a midterm election.
Yeah.
We are now the in party. You can see the transition away from out party, in party, and polling data all through 2021. And now we are squarely where the Republicans were in 2018. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we can disrupt that. We can do what they did, because they actually mitigated quite a bit of their loss in 2018. They the map for the realignment, we're talking about towards the end of the decade, and they've moved so far to capture white working class men especially, that they've isolated and triggered a realignment, a de-alignment among college educated voters.
Mm-hmm.
So we think about that, like the districts were so favorable for Democrats in 18, that there was places like Richmond where I just knew, even though that district was an R plus seven under the last PVI calculations almost a decade prior, that when it got redone, it was going to be a D district. And that's why Abigail Spanberger would win it for sure in 2018, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we think about you know, where we're at now, we're going to be coming under new maps, right? We don't have those maps finalized. So, you know, the fact is the redistricting stuff has given us an opportunity to compete for control of the House.
Yeah.
Prior to the favorable way that shook out, and that was a product of two things, Democrats in states where they had not tied their own hands behind their back already, maximized seat share, okay, and offset some of those gains. And number two, the Republicans screwed themselves by undermining the census amongst Latino voters, especially in the South, and cost themselves a couple extra seats in the process, right?
Yeah.
So that has allowed us, opened the door to compete for 218 seats in the House, all right? So when we look at these toss-ups, though, you know, we're going to see those start to slide away from Democrats over the course of the summer and the fall, unless Democrats understand that if you want to change a midterm narrative, you have to strategically change it. It's not going to change on its own.
And in fact, along those lines, Rachel, I don't know if you saw this speech from yesterday by this Michigan State Senator Mallory McMorrow. She delivered a hell of a barn burner speech about this nonsense with grooming and so on, the demonization of gay people, the attacks on Disney and so on. Well, she was personally attacked by one of her colleagues in the Michigan Senate. And she hit back in a way that I have not seen so far this year, at least coming from a Democrat. Last I checked, this video had 9 million views and counting. It's probably well over 10 by the time we're talking at this point. If the Dems did one or two of those kind of speeches per week, like really viral, salient, strong, cutting speeches, Don't you think that might change the game at this point, that there might be a chance?
I mean, I'm just looking for an opening here. So here's where we all go wrong, though, Bob. It's like we have this thing called naive realism. All humans do. It's not unique to liberals, to Democrats. Yeah. Everybody's got naive liberal realism. It's just that in this particular circumstance, electoral politics, it is particularly damaging to us. Okay. And what that is that as our human psychology, it will allow us to account for the fact that people are different, right? That there's variation in personality, intelligence, interest, whatever, but it really cannot quite empathize and, you know, actually move over to an empathetic perspective where you can think and feel and see the world in a completely different way, right? Because it's not that liberals and Democrats disagree on issues. They do. They disagree on how the world works, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so in our bubble of naive realism, our special version of it, we think everyone reads the news. Everyone knows what's happened in American politics over the last 2 years, over the last 4 years, all the headlines from the last 6 months. We assume, by and large, most of the electorate knows this, and we could not be more wrong. Okay.
Yeah.
So we could have 15 and Mallory, by the way, is a graduate of my timeline. Right. So I'm really pleased to see her out there just freaking killing it.
Yeah.
And if we had 50 of them, 50 candidates running in swing races at the federal level, at state governor's races with that kind of aggressive pushback, we would have something, okay,
yeah,
that could break through the sound barrier to the normal people. Because, Bob, you're not normal. I am not normal.
No.
Your audience is not normal. Everybody who reads news every day, even if it comes from a partisan source only, like the Republicans, is not normal in terms of what the average American electorate is like. The average American electorate is so tuned out that the day after the State of the Union, the State of the Union did not make the top 20 Google searches.
Jesus.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's not surprising in the slightest. That seems.
So if we want people to know what's happening,
yeah,
it is our job to tell them.
Uh-huh.
And we must go with the lowest hanging fruit. Okay. The Republican Party organized itself to a multi-level, multi-office, multi-state plot conspiracy to overthrow the election that ended, right? It pinnacled in an armed insurrection assault against the Capitol, which was also articulated and planned, okay?
Yeah.
And nobody knows this but us. I promise you that. Nobody knows it but us.
Well, the conversation I find myself having with other Democrats most often is this, Rachel, and it's kind of a, I wouldn't say it's a disagreement as much of it as a debate, which is that I think there's expectations that the DNC in particular is going to be the source of some sort of message that's going to resonate to all Democrats, whether you follow this stuff 24/7 or not, and that the DNC could turn it all around. And I always question that because there are other entities that create messages that tend to resonate. And I think there's too much of an expectation that it should just come from Jamie Harrison and the DNC and game over. If it doesn't, then we lose. What are some of the other sources of Democratic messaging that not only could turn around the midterms, but also in a general sense? Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And you mean it's actually touching on our biggest problem, which is decentralization, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like, why isn't it falling on all these activist groups? It is falling on all these activist groups. Let me take a step back and explain to people. Jamie Harrison is performing the job of chairman of the DNC just fine, right?
Yeah.
He's raising a shit ton of money.
Yep.
And his job is to run the institution of the DNC. And in terms of electoral politics, that organization tends to focus on institutional stuff like voter registration and things, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There is no messaging command center. There is no command center. There is no war cabinet. There is no general. There is no institution in the Democratic Party that exists to win elections and to structure effective, centralized, hard-hitting electoral strategy. And instead, it does fall to all of these individual groups, every one of which is run by, you know, a person that considers their message to be superior to everybody else's, and that's exactly the opposite of what we need. And then within the party's structure, you know, there the focus is, okay, let me explain it this way. In the RNC, they're focused on one thing. The only ROI that matters, that's return on investment, that matters to Republicans and to the RNC is winning, mm-hmm. period. Yep. Okay. So there's no focus, there's no mission creep. The mission is to win as many seats as possible, wherever possible, right? And in our system, we want to win elections, but we also want to make sure we're diversifying staffs. Okay. We also need to make sure we're using union, you know, people to mm-hmm. do everything.
Yeah.
And we need to make sure so on and so forth, Bob. So what you have there is you have winning equally important to all of these other, you know, priorities.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't need to tell you why that's a total and utter disaster when you are facing a dishonest opposition, which has perfected a Joseph Goebbels Nazi style propaganda machine. It's on its fifth cycle of it. And what it is going to put forth in 2022 is going to be the most vicious version you have ever seen.
Yeah, I think that's pretty clear even now. One of my chief concerns in all of this, Rachel, is I feel as though we're going to be back where we were with the Glenn Youngkin race in Virginia once again, yes. where we're constantly triaging whatever nonsense the Republicans have invented, mostly targeting people with school-age children. And
yeah, and Bob ignoring me sitting there 6 months ahead
yeah.
saying, hey, you've got a generic ballot problem, you've got an enthusiasm problem.
Mm-hmm.
The Republican Party runs this system. It's a statewide funnel basically model, right? From state legislature to the House races, to the gubernatorial or to the Senate, whatever it is a funnel system. The messaging, the targeting is all sophisticated. There's no, hey, should we spend money on mobilization ads or persuasion ads? Because every ad the GOP makes does both of these things and does it way more effectively than we ever could, right?
Yeah.
Because it's all emotive, it's stakes framing, it's apocalyptic, it's rhetorical hyperbole, but it gets the job done. It drives their voters to the polls and they met their presidential turnout practically in their best districts, which is unheard of. I mean, always you have drop off, right? So like mm-hmm. people are like, oh, the turnout was high in Virginia for Republicans, okay? Like
yeah.
it was fantastic for Republicans. And that's because they have a system that is designed to maximize it from the most strident Republican card-carrying party member all the way up to your right-leaning indies, and they deployed it expertly. And, you know, you think it was painful for you. I lived in Virginia mm-hmm. until this fall, and I sold my house because they would not run this strategy. And I knew they were going to drop the state. And what I wanted to do in terms of the messaging deployment was paint a picture of life under a modern Republican governor.
Bingo.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it had, and of course, what are they, is everyone focused on now living this life, right? So Youngkin's out there doing the crazy stuff that we could have told voters he was coming to do to the state. And Republicans almost certainly would have done that message.
And instead, what we do is we end up responding to their message, and then that becomes our message. And that's a problem yeah. for example, the Mallory McMorrow. As great as that speech was, as perfect as the content was, the writing, the delivery, it was still responding to a Republican message rather than seizing the
offense,
initiative.
Right?
And yeah, exactly.
Bob, so astute of you to realize that. And so, yes, I mean, this is the other thing I tried to get Democrats to do. I said, listen, you cannot engage on CRT. It doesn't matter that you're right on the morals,
right.
the ethics, the facts, doesn't matter. Okay. The entire point this issue was created was to make race the salient topic of conversation, because it is a game you literally cannot win in this environment, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All people here, the small pool of swing voters that do exist, all they heard in Virginia in 2021 was Democrats want to make your white kids feel bad about being white. Mm-hmm. That's what CRT is designed to do. And it will do it effectively everywhere in 2022. What our job is to do is to not let them set the terms of the topics that we're going to debate. Here is a party that is proposing middle-class and working-class American tax hikes. They want to gut and end Social Security and Medicare in 5 years, ostensibly stealing those of us who've been invested in those systems for decades, right?
Yeah.
And pushing our parents, our grandparents out into the streets to die, right? Yep. So these are the things they don't want us to talk about, and we must endeavor to ignore their bait. They know we're stupid and we can't resist it because we know we're right. And so they love to lay us out. Here's what we're going to have 22 about. We're going to have 2022 about parents' rights, quote unquote, and race, okay? And our job is to say no, hell no. Mm-hmm. 2022 is a referendum on the Republican Party. This is what the Republican agenda looks like today. It's a fascist agenda. It is dangerous to you personally, voter, to your health, to your wealth, to your physical safety, right? And this is an existential threat that you're facing that we must make clear to them.
Okay, more with Rachel here in just 1 second. But first, about 10 years ago, I was buried under a mountain of debt. I had no idea how I was going to get out from under all this debt. It was incredible. It was sleepless nights trying to figure out what kind of payments, how long is it going to take for me to escape this burden, this anvil hanging over my head. I took extreme measures to absolve my debt, but you don't have to do that. All you need is LightStream. So did you know that refinancing your credit card balances can lower your interest rate and save you a ton of money? And you don't have to be a financial expert in order to do it. Here's how. So with LightStream, you can roll your credit cards into one low payment at a fixed rate as low as 4.98% APR with autopay and excellent credit. That's way lower than the 19% APR you might be paying on your credit cards right now. Go check your statement. I bet it's around 19%. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and there are absolutely no fees. LightStream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they're going to deliver. Also, they're going to deliver this just for my listeners. Apply now and get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Seska. That's LightStream.com/CESCA. Link in the description under this episode at bobseska.com. Subject to credit approval, rates range from 4.98% APR to 19.99% APR and include a 0.50% autopay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Seska for more information.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Bob Seska!
All-time favorites all day long!
Can the Democrats employ patriotism as an attack against Republicans, the lack of Republican patriotism? Would that be an effective attack?
We should be wedging that. We should be hitting them every day. Half the party is pro-Putin. Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
The Republican Party has yielded to us their two sacred cows, the economy and national security.
Mm-hmm.
And we are fools if we do not go in there and aggressively grab them.
You're so right. It was shocking to read this New Yorker piece by Jane Mayer the other day about the American Accountability Foundation. And this it's basically a dark money group. I don't know if you saw the piece, Rachel, but it's a well-financed dark money group, and they've been tasked with smearing all of these both cabinet candidates and also judicial nominees. I always wonder, are there any groups like this on the Democratic side?
No.
That's what's baffling to me. Why? The question is why?
And that's what my mission is, right? I mean, one of the reasons I left Strike Pack is I thought it was important to have moral clarity to be able to say, hey, this is what's coming. This is the size of the seat share that they're looking at gaining right now on these two metrics, mm-hmm. and not have it feel like I'm trying to raise money for my own organization. So that was one of the reasons that I left the pack. But the other reason is, it's to be able to be very clear about what we lack and what we need to survive. We do not have a command center. We are in a war. They have declared war against Democrats, against journalists, against policymakers, against election officials, against gay people, against everyone that does not want to live in their conservative orthodoxy, you know, weird alt reality. Mm-hmm. And we don't get a choice. This is a war they declared and they are waging on us. And they have been running, like, you know, just running us loose for a long time on it. We must respond. And if we're in an electoral war scenario and we have no command structure and no general, well, as somebody who has spent a couple years now looking at military strategy, let me tell you, the number of armies that have survived battle with no command, pretty damn low, Bob.
Oh, yes. But I mean,
and you know what else? I'll tell you this. Yeah. I'm tired of hearing, well, we don't have. And, you know, it's been, I'm sure you're familiar with American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC. Mm-hmm. That's their organization that does model legislation. So that's the reason within a week of hearing Tucker Carlson talk about testicle tanning, you'll see 14 bills and Republican legislators, you know, expanding testicle tanning beds or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Because they have this policy shop that makes model bills like Stand Your Ground, farms them out, and gets them deployed quick in the state legislature. So this party is ineffective at the federal level and then ruling the roost big time in terms of Republican policy at the state level. They built the Federalist Society and now control 6-3 the court. Every conservative on there is a member of the Federalist Society, right? They built Judicial Watch to help them do that. We have done nothing. So year after year, cycle after cycle, I and others, I'm certainly not the only person that's made this observation, have said, hey, how come we don't have this? How come we don't have that? Well, I'm not a member of an organized party. I'm a Democrat.
Yeah,
and you know what? Yeah. I'm done with the folksy bullshit. Okay, we're the smartest people in the country. We're the smartest people in the country.
Yeah.
Tell me we cannot devise a system that can go toe-to-toe with these clowns who are so incompetent that when they do try to overthrow the government, they do it on their own phones and via text.
Exactly. I keep going back to that SNL sketch from the 1988 presidential election where Michael Dukakis, played by John Lovitz, turns to George H.W. Bush and says, I can't believe I'm losing to this guy. And that's the thing with the Democratic Party. It's like you stand there and you see what's happening on the right with, as you said, testicle tanning and Mr. Potato Head and teachers indoctrinating students and all this crap. And you go, I can't believe we're losing to these people. They invaded the fucking Capitol.
No, and we're
losing to them. How is that possible?
Yeah. And I'm just sorry, but I'm just not going to accept it. Okay. Like if I fail, I fail. But I am here to tell everybody right now today on April 420, woo, 420. Okay.
And you're in Oregon.
Can disrupt the midterm effect. But right now, we have no strategy in place to do so.
Yeah.
No institution capable of executing it anyway. That is my mission, is to tell people, this is what we're facing. We must make the conversation dominate about Republicans. So, you know, I have absolutely zero worry that we're going to have tons of ads and messaging about how Democrats did this and they did that and they delivered shit, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. That's great. There will be zero war machine messaging as of today that's effective. We need a full brand assault.
Yeah.
We need to make it very clear to voters. This is what the modern Republican Party is, because right now, most of them just think it's about taxes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Low taxes. Yeah. Republican low taxes. Good for the economy. Our job is to define the Republican Party as an existential threat to them personally. Hammer that point home. Make sure our coalitional turnout is optimized by sophisticated targeting that understands how voters behave. And, you know, people who drop out of the electorate aren't motivated off of like rosy policy shit.
Yeah.
Fear, threat, stakes. Yep. That's how they did it. That's how we must do it. We're not special people. We don't have a special psychology that makes us immune from negative shit. We just don't like to admit it moves us. Okay. So it's time to wake up. get real, because it's not, it's, we're not no longer in a wildfire situation. The whole motherfucking country is on fire.
Yeah.
And we have to meet the moment.
There's so much navel gazing that goes on too around the notion, and you've mentioned this word already at least a couple of times, Rachel, and that's the fascism word. A lot of Democrats I hear from say, well, how are you going to sell the idea of Republican fascism to the quote unquote folks, the people who don't follow politics on Twitter on a day-to-day basis, who are only casual voters or casual followers of politics? And what do you say to those people? I mean, how do you make that pitch?
It cracks me up, because it's like, what do they think that socialism, like Democrats, when I ran a poll in I think this is like 2016, maybe 2017. I ran a poll once and asked voters, what's the first word that pops in your mind when you hear? And like, you know, I had various things, Republicans, Democrats, Donald Trump, that, right? Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. And for Democrats, guess what it was, dude? Socialist.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So like, you would think these folks, I mean, do you think people just naturally came to that?
No.
Dude. Socialism is no more concrete for people, or wasn't anyway 10 years ago, than fascism is. The reason why Republicans are convinced, by the way, they are convinced we're the baddies, okay? They are told on a day-to-day fucking basis, the Democrats, the left, they're destroying America, they're stealing your rights, they're coming, they're violating the rule of law, all the shit that they're actually doing, they say about us to their electorate. So their electorate is fired up and thinks they're on the front lines of defending democracy against us, dude. So like, yes, we can make fascism stick.
Yeah.
But you can't just do it abstractly. So the shit that I talk about is simple, but it's not simplistic. Okay.
Yeah.
And when you do it abstractly, like Youngkin or McAuliffe did in Virginia, when he puts up a couple ads, oh, you know, Youngkin's just like Trump. That's it. That's no definition of what that would mean for voters. No definition of just like Trump, what that actually means, mm-hmm. right? No,
yeah.
No personalization. I mean, just completely inadequate messaging in that regard. So no, you cannot make people worry about fascism with messaging like that, mm-hmm. but you can make them worry about it.
Yeah. And one of the things that always concerns me, and this is structural, I think, on the Democratic side, whenever I see, for example, Joe Biden's approval numbers, and I see that Republican voters, only 3% think Joe Biden is doing a decent job, whereas on the Democratic side, 12% disapprove. And to me, the structural problem that we face is the difference between that 3% and the 12%. Do you follow what I'm saying? And I've been referring, I've been referring to that gap as the fascism gap, because that gap, where that lack of enthusiasm on the Democratic side versus the lockstep posture of the Republican side, that's where we end up losing, right?
Absolutely. And you know what? I don't think it's healthy. I don't want to be doing any of this shit, Bob. I mean, I started my career writing a dissertation about how polarization was going to be a major problem for America. And boy, mm-hmm. was I wrong, because it's a nuclear bomb, right? I mean, this is not in my, I am a natural moderate. I'm a pragmatist. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's not like I'm like, yay, let's go out there and wage similar psychological warfare on our side of the electorate for fun. Okay.
Yeah.
But the fact of the fucking matter is that's what we're up against on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
It is now gone to the point where it's going to frame all of us as pedophiles, groomers, and, you know, the kind of messaging. I mean, this has already become staple. Every response that I get on Twitter, I don't, you know, respond to these guys, but I'll see Republicans on my timeline. Every one of them is about how I'm a child predator. I'm a pedophile sympathizer, right?
Yeah.
So this shit's already prolific through their food chain. They have a system that is designed to do one thing, terrify their base about us and disqualify us in the eyes of independent voters.
Mm-hmm.
We must meet them with fire.
Why are Democrats so hesitant to fight fire? Why can't we do this?
So inherently against. I mean, like I just said, you know, I'm a pretty liberal person, dude. I mean, I'm pretty liberal. I just happen to be pragmatic, and it balances it out.
Yeah, we're about the same on that front. Yeah.
But here's the thing. I'm also, I mean, I'm Yeah, no, this is so antithetical to the liberal worldview. Mm-hmm. It is not, it's not like teaching a bicycle rider how to ride a unicycle, okay? It's like teaching somebody who can't walk how to ride a unicycle. Right? Like, you know what I mean? It's so against their nature that even the people that are receptive to the work I'm doing and work with me and let me fix their stuff, I have to teach them how to think in a whole different way mm-hmm. to construct brand advertising, brand messaging that is doing the work of both disqualifying them and promoting us.
Okay, one last break before we wrap up the show. If you're pissed off at cable news and other very serious political analysts these days, here's an outstanding way to support independent media, specifically this podcast. For just $5 per month, you can support our Patreon page as we guide you through the madness and chaos of our politics. But it's not just about supporting shows like this one. You're also going to get bonus content as a reward for your monthly support. We're talking about exclusive access to our Shadow Docket podcast, recorded after the end credits roll on our Tuesday and Thursday shows. You also get access to the Patreon app where you can download the free show and our bonus content. Plus, you can join the discussion with our community of Patreon members in the comments under each episode. All that for just $5 per month, just pennies per show. Don't miss out. Again, that's BobSeskaShow.com. Bookmark it, send it to all your friends, and we thank you.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Bob Seska plays more music.
Well, Jesus. I know you have a hard out, Rachel, but I want to ask you one last question. Is there anything positive that you see on the horizon for the Democrats as far as maybe something that's happening on the ground in a Senate race or a congressional race or certainly a state and local race, which is where I think the Democrats have their biggest impediment as far as energy goes? Is there anything that we can grapple onto that won't make us jump off a cliff?
Yeah, let me tell you this, Bob. Yeah. I mean, here the fundamentals are rough for us, right? Uh-huh. Not only do you have this in-party, out-party fundamental, but I mean, the economy drives me fucking nuts, right? The other day, a Democrat, straight up House member of the Democratic Party on TV, I won't say who, was like, yeah, you know, we've done some stuff. Like, you know, we stabilized the entire economy and, you know, got this whole international coalition to go up against Putin. And, you know, but we haven't really delivered enough. I'm like, dude, what? Millions of Americans would have been financially devastated by this pandemic.
That's right.
Okay.
Yep.
So like maybe we could start with that, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, that's neither here nor there. The point is this: the fundamentals are against us. We are the in party now. We have no enthusiasm in our coalition. We have a gap among swing voters on who they want to control Congress. We can only change that if we get swing voters to know what we know. They don't know anything that we know. So we must bring that info to them and make it very easy and impossible for them to ignore, frankly, right?
Yeah.
And if we did that, the politics of the moment could not be better for us. And that's why I'm completely fucking mystified as to why the A-list of the Democratic Party's consultant class is still sitting there hand-wringing about what AOC or Ilhan Omar might say or do. Oh. When I'm like, look, dude, I spend zero amount of time worrying about what five people in the Democratic caucus are going to do. Mm-hmm. Okay. Why? Because there's nothing. Number one, we could wave a wand and make them disappear tomorrow. And guess what? Mm-hmm. Every moderate in every swing race that we run is still going to be branded as a socialist that wants to defund the police. They don't care about reality. They make the brand stick to every candidate. And there's no quarter given for people who are, no, I don't support that. And they even tried to brand Joe Biden as a socialist who wanted to defund the police. The only reason it failed there, of course, is because Joe Biden was the former vice president and has a massive public reputation to protect him, right?
Yeah.
And so the politics of the moment are are all for us. We can hit them on economics. We can tell the story of how Reaganomics decimated the American middle class. The Republican Party had its hand behind the decline of our infrastructure. It has stood in the way of action on climate change. It is standing in the way now of action on every pressing public policy issue we have. Okay. And we need to make it clear. This ain't your granddaddy's GOP, folks. Mm-hmm. This is a Republican Party that wants to eliminate abortion, eliminate birth control, take control of the federal government, federalize our state system, you know, potentially putting it under one national conservative umbrella. We are in a crisis situation, and we have to make sure voters don't walk into the ballot booth in 2022 with a normalcy frame, right? We need a crisis frame. That's how we can turn things around. And of course, you've got Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger on that select committee getting ready to send us balls. They're going to pitch them out. Question is, can I scramble a system in place to hit the ball they pitch? Because it's not enough to have hearings. It's not enough to have MSNBC and New York Times and even little local papers talking about what actually happened in them. We have to find a way to make average people look at the information that we want them to see. And anything else other than that aggressive push is going to fail us.
We got to find you $1 billion right now, Rachel, and you need to enact this plan immediately, because this is, God, this is exactly everything that you've said here is exactly what we need to do. Oh, my God. Thank you so much.
And you know what? And Bob, that's again, just a one more shameless pitch. That's why I was like, OK, look, people don't want to give me money. Fine. OK, I'll be free agent.
Yeah.
Bring me in, man. Let me fix your campaign. Let me fix your candidate races, your IEs. We can optimize this. We can do it together. We have a common enemy in the anti-democratic Republican Party. Mm-hmm. And this is a moment we should all be rowing in the same direction.
Yeah, I so agree. You can follow Rachel on Twitter at Rachel Bitticoff, or I got a link in the description under this episode of BobSeska.com. Any place else you want people to track you down?
No, I think that'll do it,
that's
Bob.
That's a horrible way to put it. Yeah, can anyone else track you down somewhere? Oh my God! Thank you so, thank you so
trust
much.
Trust me,
Rachel.
I already get some fun mail.
Yeah. Oh God, I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine your DMs. You are the smartest kid in class. Thank you so much for all your hard work, Rachel. And I hope people are listening. I hope people pay attention to exactly what you're saying. This is the real deal.
And I can't thank you enough for helping me get that message out.
You bet. Take care. We'll talk to you next time.
Yep, sounds good.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.